US Secretary of Defense General Lloyd Austin is in Delhi. Other high US security officials, Secretary Blinken and National Security Advisor Sullivan, they've been at Anchorage in Alaska, sort of in a shouting match or exchanging insults with the Chinese delegation there, Zhang Jiechi and Wang Yi. So we will talk about these in some detail as more clarity emerges, because these are hush-hush meetings. You see what you see by way of formal statements, but the rest filters down in the next few days. So we'll wait, and maybe on Monday or Tuesday, we'll talk about those two meetings in some greater detail. Meanwhile, let's look at a third meeting, or a story coming out of a third meeting, where also American high officials are involved and the subcontinent has very strong stakes. That is the meeting that the Russians held in Moscow on Afghanistan peace. So Russians in Moscow, they also have a special envoy called Kabulov, who's been setting this up, bit like Americans have Zalmay Khalilzad, who I once called a conflict entrepreneur, which I stand by. Now, Russians organized this meeting of the various Afghan factions, including the Afghan government or people or a delegation representing the Republic of Afghanistan as it is right now, from the Taliban, from the US, Pakistan. But they excluded Iran, and more significantly for us, they excluded India. That is not something that the Americans have done. Americans have now asked that the UN call a meeting in Turkey where India and Iran will also be present. Nevertheless, we are not talking about the larger meeting and the peace process. We've talked about that a couple of times. We'll talk about one particular individual whose face you cannot miss in that meeting. And his name is Gulbuddin Hikmatyar. Gulbuddin, but sometimes people spell his name as Gulbuddin, but he's Gulbuddin, like Qutbuddin, as we know the spelling of spelling. Gulbuddin Hikmatyar. He's also called engineer Gulbuddin Hikmatyar, because he's not a fully qualified engineer. He's a dropout from Kabul University engineering faculty or department, but he studied engineering, so he's called engineer. Now, he is there, and he is one of the most remarkable characters that we can talk about. So today is one of those occasional days when we do some storytelling, and who and what better story to tell you than a character called Gulbuddin Hikmatyar, because people come and people go, and sometimes they are dispatched by Hikmatyar himself, but he comes out as a winner. And after nearly 40 years, more than 40 years of fighting in Afghanistan, in which several millions of people have been killed and more than 10 million have been exiled or thrown out of their homes and rendered refugees in neighboring Pakistan and Iran, he seems to have emerged a victor simply by virtue of the fact that he survived. All other rivals of his at various points of time, or most of them, have either died or disappeared, and some, as I said earlier, have been dispatched by him. So he's somebody who my favorite and irreverential and outrageously so writer P.G. O'Rourke once described as a man who is quote-unquote not so hot so at killing the Soviets, but very good at killing his fellow Afghans. Now, what is he doing in this delegation? And how did I get focused on this story today? With so much else happening, with Lloyd Austin here and Blinken and Sullivan there, and also COVID numbers rising and Government of India continuing to struggle with its vaccine, shambolic vaccine program. So reason I got focused on it was that I was looking at the Twitter feed of Mujeeb Mashal, who's the new New York Times correspondent in Delhi. He comes from Afghanistan. So I saw a tweet on his handle that had a picture. In fact, it has a combination picture, because he has in turn shared a tweet from a journalist of Tolo News in Afghanistan. Tolo News is an Afghan news agency, a very good one. So this is a tweet from Karim Amini, who is a journalist on Tolo News, and he has posted these two pictures. So one picture is the delegation of the Afghan government, or what we might call as a Republican delegation, posing for a group photo at Moscow, at the talks, after the talks a group photo. Everybody who goes in a delegation likes to have a group photo for their grandchildren or whoever, or their neighbors or significant others. Now, as that picture is being taken, one person is walking in the other direction, who's not featuring in the picture. That person, you see that picture from that tweet, that picture is of Gulbuddin Hikmatyar. So that picture and that tweet has been shared by Mujib Mashal with a beautiful, wonderful tweet. He says that even when he's part of the journey, even when Hikmatyar is part of the journey, Hikmatyar travels only with Hikmatyar, which means that even there, although he's part of the delegation and part of the journey, is a very, very clever metaphor, because it tells you that there is somebody who's been through this bloodletting for more than four decades now. But he travels with himself, means he only is focused on his own interests. So you see these pictures which tell you a story. And I thought that was a good reason for us to talk about this remarkable character, not one of my favorite people. I think as a reporter, I would say he's a fantastic story always, but that is only as long as you are not at the receiving end of his really vicious and vile talents. Now, Gulbuddin Hikmatyar was born in 1949. So he's not that old. He's just 72 years old yet. He was born in 1949. He comes from the Khilji tribe. Khilji, the same as the Khilji that Ranbir Singh played in that film. So he comes from the Khilji tribe from Ghazni. Again, it's a place that is familiar in India. So Khilji tribe, he was seen as a bright fellow. His family sent him to the military academy early on as a teenager. Didn't last out, got expelled from the military academy because he was seen to be too much of an Islamist. After that, he joined Kabul University, the engineering department, was training to become an engineer. But still at the same time, he was quite an active Islamist. And if I take you back to Afghanistan of those days, the regimes in Afghanistan were pro-Soviet regimes. I would not go so far as to say they were all Soviet puppets, but really Afghanistan was meant to be the British buffer between their empire and the Tsarist Russia. But now Afghanistan had become Soviet Union's buffer with the Western forces, because Pakistan was seen to be an area of Western influence, and until mid-70s, even Iran was an area of Western influence until the revolution and the overthrow of the Shah of Iran. So this was a time when it wasn't very safe to be an Islamist. So he set up this Islamist activity in the university as well. And it's one of those quirks of fate, or one of those coincidences, that it was precisely at this time that another young Afghan was studying to be an engineer at the same university, and his name was Ahmad Shah Massoud. Now, Ahmad Shah Massoud was from the north of Kabul. So he was from a different region, different ethnicity, different tribe. One was Pashtun, that is Hikmatyar. One was Tajik, that is Ahmad Shah Massoud. But he was also studying to be an engineer, so he was also called Engineer Ahmad Shah Massoud. In the course of time, they went in their different directions. Now, they kept on arguing, jostling with each other. Ahmad Shah Massoud was more of an inclusive bent of mind. He was less Islamist. Hikmatyar, on the other hand, was purely Islamist. It so happens, and I'll tell you how, that he even became Prime Minister of Afghanistan twice in early 1990s. So when he goes in this delegation, he goes in his own capacity, but you ask him, who are you? And you find that almost nobody introduces him as a former prime minister. In fact, even if you see all the news coverage, you don't see him introduced as a former prime minister, because he's been through so many avatars, and maybe he also doesn't want to admit who he was partners with at that point and who he betrayed, because everybody he partnered with, he betrayed in the course of time if he did not kill them. So here is the man who's back now in the picture. Now, in mid-1970s, he was turned out of Afghanistan because it was a Daoud regime, pro-Soviet Daoud regime. Daoud regime was hunting for him because he was an Islamist, and Islamists were fighting communists, they thought it was a sacrilege that an Islamic state, as they saw it, was being ruled by pro-communist regime. So he escaped from Afghanistan, went to Pakistan. In Pakistan, Zulfikar Ali Bhutto at that point, Pakistan and Afghanistan have had an old issue. The Durand Line has not been recognized as their border by the Afghans. There are lots of cross-border loyalties, kinship, family relationships on both sides. Pakistan has always been insecure about Afghanistan, and that was the period when Afghanistan was under Soviet influence and Soviet Union and India were treaty-bound allies. So Pakistan gave him refuge. At some point, Pakistan also gave Ahmad Shah Massoud refuge because he came into Pakistan. By 1976, however, Ahmad Shah Massoud had been arrested by the Pakistani intelligence authorities on suspicion of being a foreign spy, Soviet or Indian or Soviet come Indian, I don't know. And it was widely believed, and now I think it's more or less accepted, that that was the doing of Mr. Hikmatyar himself. So he was, quote unquote, a talented guy from the very beginning. 1976, you can see that he's just about 30 years old, not even 30 years old, about 27 years old by now. So he stayed on. Ahmad Shah Massoud got arrested. In 1979-80 is when everything changed in Afghanistan, because that is when the Soviets came in. Afghanistan had several changes of regime. Babrak Karmal, Taraki, Najibullah. Let's not go into the details of that. But this is when the Islamist sort of uprising against the new Afghan regime started. And that's when the Americans saw an opportunity to settle scores for Vietnam War by teaching the Russians, Soviets a lesson by giving them their own Vietnam in Afghanistan. But also this was a time when Cold War was at its peak. So they thought might as well now fight the Soviet power in Afghanistan, particularly in a situation where no American or allied lives will be risked. So that's when America, China, Saudi Arabia, and definitely Pakistan. So Pakistan, this is when Pakistan became a stalwart ally of the Americans. And that is when these groups came up in Afghanistan. So in three big refugee camps of Afghanistan, and as I go along, I will show you some pictures. So you see this picture. This is from one of those refugee camps not far from Peshawar. It just so happens, because it was Peshawar, that you find me wearing a salwar kameez. Anyway, so he found a lot of influence in three of those refugee camps and set up some kind of a force of Mujahideen of his own. In the course of time, became a Mujahideen commander. So initially, he was part of a larger Islamic group. Then he split. One group went out with Maulvi Yunus Khalis. The other group was his group. So say one was called Hizb-e-Islami. That is G, Hizb-e-Islami Gulbuddin, and let's call the other one Hizb-e-Islami K. K is Khalis. So two factions went their own ways. He was never somebody who could live in a partnership or who could share power or responsibility with anybody. By 1979-80, however, he had become the favorite of the Pakistanis and the Americans also, because he was efficient, he was young, he was articulate, and he was clever as hell. So somehow he sold them the idea that he was the best of the fighters among the Mujahideen. As I said to you earlier, he wasn't that good at killing the Soviets. He was excellent at killing fellow Afghans, particularly those who he saw as competition in his life. He has made two attempts, or he has organized two attempts on the life of Hamid Karzai, the former president, who incidentally was also present at these talks. And you can imagine, here I am, and here is my failed assassin, not once, but twice over. So this fighting went on. The Americans came in. Gulbuddin Hikmatyar and his group, and his Hizb group, collected the lion's share of American equipment, money, etc. Also because he was ISI's favorite, and ISI chief, Lieutenant General Hamid Gul's favorite. And they kept on also directing a lot more of the aid and weaponry and money to him, because he was their favorite. He was their favorite child, and his organization was the most loyal to them, or they saw it as the most loyal to them. So he became preeminent. By 1992, he also had the knack of being in the right place at the right time. So by 1992, when the Najibullah government fell, he was around Kabul, and that is when he got involved. Initially, he joined the government. He even became prime minister. That's when he became prime minister twice in very short spells. And I'll tell you what happened. And I will also tell you how is it that he was able to impress many people, the Pakistanis, generals, the Americans, English-speaking soldiers, spies, diplomats. That's because he was very well educated and a thoughtful person. Also, somebody with gift of the gab in his own language. So even when he was a student, he was an Islamic radical student, he wrote a 150-page book. obviously, I haven't had the pleasure of being able to read that book because he wrote it in Pashto. But he wrote a book called Priority of Senses Over Matter. Remember, Navjot Singh Sidhu, whenever he's giving a cricket commentary, he says, mind over matter, mind over matter. So that's what Hikmatyar was saying in that book. That book was Priority of Senses Over Matter. And there, this was his intellectual argument against communism and against communist belief that God doesn't exist. And he quoted top philosophers, Hegel, Schlegel, everybody, to make his point. So he was seen as a minor intellectual in a crowd of mostly illiterate people. That is what the Mujahideen were, or most of the Mujahideen were. And he took advantage of that. He was also influenced by Muslim Brotherhood in the mid-60s. So he had that ideological training. So any international journalist who traveled in Afghanistan at that time, as even I did several times, we were always made aware of the fact that he is the most brutal of a generally brutal group. That is his group. And that line I'm taking from a New York Times story. So he was somebody who was known to have no mercy for foe, but also for friend. Because one who is foe today is a rival today. One who is a friend today can be a rival tomorrow. So if there's any outside chance of somebody becoming a rival, get rid of them as soon as possible. And in the course of time, he acquired the title of Butcher of Kabul. Because he got almost vindictive with Kabul. He had the sense that Kabul had collaborated with the Soviets and therefore deserved to pay a big punishment. So he joined hands with other warlords, one of whom was also in these talks, a man called Abdul Rashid Dostum. And I will tell you more about him at some other time. He's probably the most successful warlord cum mercenary of our times anywhere. If you see his pictures now, you will find there are more medals on his chest than you will find in any kabaddi shop in the Kabaddi Bazaar of Delhi or Bhindi Bazaar of Bombay or any flea market at a kabaddi shop. He wears so many medals, calls himself a general, but he is a mercenary and a warlord. So Hikmatyar at one point fought Dostum, at another point joined hands with Dostum and basically kept on pounding Kabul with bombs, artillery and rockets. In fact, when he briefly joined the government, a very weak government of Sibghatullah Mujaddidi, who was a Mujahideen leader, whose assistant Hamid Karzai used to be. There was a charge that he organized a rocket attack on a plane on which his president was flying, president being Mujaddidi. And then he fell out, went out. So basically, for a long time, he pounded Kabul, got lots of people killed a lot of people. And at one point, he had even boasted to somebody that this jihad or this war has already consumed a million plus lives. We are quite happy to sacrifice a million plus more so that we can have a genuinely Islamic state in Afghanistan. So he is the original Islamist. And then life changed. Life changed because his rivalry with Ahmad Shah Massoud kept on getting worse and worse. He tried to get Ahmad Shah Massoud killed. He failed. Later, the Pakistani ISI and the Taliban succeeded, but that happened much later. And that's also a story for another time. He fought with Ahmad Shah Massoud's people, but when he was cornered and he had to escape, and he thought, because on the one hand, from the one end, he had the Taliban coming at him, and from the other, he had the Afghan forces, and then he panicked and he escaped to the north. So he found refuge actually with Ahmad Shah Massoud, who for some reason gave him security and refuge and also helped him traveled to Iran, and he hid in Iran for 6 years. So Iranians were his hosts. He also set up his organization and kept running it in Iran. It's only after the Americans came into Afghanistan after 9/11 that Americans then prevailed upon the Iranians and the Pakistanis. So he had to close his offices in Iran, but sure enough, he came towards Pakistan and he mostly took refuge there because he had his patrons in the ISI and the Pakistani army. Then in the course of time over the 8-10 years, he again put together a group. He again began fighting. Now he claims credit for having helped Osama bin Laden and Ayman al-Zawahiri to escape from Tora Bora mountains, which were under attack and heavy bombing with daisy cutters by the Americans. Right or wrong, we don't know, but generally it's believed to be true. It's also believed to be true that in the course of time, he killed a bunch of American journalists. Although he blamed the Soviets for it, it now seems that his people had killed them, but blamed the Soviets. He also killed a French aid worker and several people like that. But he kept on growing in his stature. You know, what makes your stature grow in those parts of Afghanistan? By 2008, he had become a fairly prominent fighter against Americans. So here is somebody who had fought the Russians. He was now fighting the Americans, but as I said earlier, he was mostly killing fellow Afghans. By 2010, he had become even more prominent. He had now established tie-ups, relationships with the Taliban and Al-Qaeda. They were not his enemies anymore. And as this went on, and the legend of Gulbuddin Hikmatyar staged a revival, in 2016, he and his group signed a peace deal with the government of Afghanistan and came over ground, and they were pardoned all their sins. Since then, he's been a part of the establishment, and he now fancies his chances of becoming maybe a new interim president once a new interim government comes in. So once again, a 40-45-year journey, leaving lots of bodies in his wake. But he got one thing right, which is that he survived. And because he survived, once again, he's landed on the right side, on his feet, and sees an opportunity for himself. So this is the remarkable story I thought I will tell you today. He's once again not my favorite people. He's not somebody I want ruling Afghanistan. But he is a reality, and he also embodies everything that's gone wrong with Afghanistan and this multiple history of multiple superpower interventions there.